in a moment or two, I'm going, oh, yeah, I do see that. Now, I don't know that the light bulb is going on over this second picture, but it's pretty interesting. It could be something else, but when it is described as it has been described by Glenn, it's not hard to see. It's really not hard to see. I don't know if all this adds up to the immensity of there are alien bases on the moon or not yet, but then again, we're not done. We'll be right back. Okay, so you can follow along with these photographs. Glenn Steckling has them up on the coasttocoastam.com website, and you're welcome to follow along with us. Photograph one of the moon dark side, big glowing something there. Definitely intriguing. Photograph two, something pouring from one crater to another crater. Also definitely intriguing. The third photograph is of one of our astronauts. So, Glenn, let's talk about that.
That's an Apollo 12 photograph, another Hasselblad, high-quality photograph as well. And it shows an elliptical object staying within the frame, as you can see, elliptical, bean-shaped, luminescent object hanging over the astronaut's head, casting enough light and luminescence to completely light up the left side of the astronaut as we look at the frame.
It's true. It's blossomed out, bloomed out, I think they call it in photography. Mm-hmm. It's bloomed out. Now, why isn't that the sun we're talking about?
Well, when we look at the sun, we look at an area that, of course, is not shaped as a ellipse or a bean shape or saucer-shaped. We're looking at a complete planetary body that's casting light from it, so you're looking at a sphere rather than an ellipse. It's a totally different configuration.
Well, it's weird. I'll give you that.
The best thing
it does seem to be illuminating the astronaut. Now, what about the possibility that the photograph itself is simply overexposed, terribly overexposed? Is that possible?
Well, how can you overexpose a section of it in such a fashion? Look at the rest of the photograph. Look at the ground and the topography here to the left side of the photograph, the little ridge.
Yep, I see it.
All right, and you look at the stones that are here on the ground as well, the ones that are laying flatter.
And they're not overexposed.
They're not overexposed either.
Yeah.
So once again, we're talking about interesting photographs showing interesting features to cause us to talk about a lot of other possibilities.
Yeah, okay. So that's pretty interesting. All right, you're right. The rest of it is not overexposed. There's a single point source for this light, and it's an extremely strong light. All right, now, how about this, Doctor? If such a thing was going on as we see pictured here, how could the astronauts not have been going, oh, my God, there's something above us, something lighting it. It's like the sun has come out.
Well, how would we know that they didn't? You know, there is some telemetry. I recall, I believe that was from Apollo 15, where they were talking about, they were seeing some type of object or what have you, and Mission Control was asking him to switch to a different ultra-high frequency, so that it wasn't on the broadcast channel.
Is that so?
So, I mean, these particular frequencies are monitored expressly by their governing agencies. So,
do you happen to have any audio of that? I would sure love to hear it.
I have recalled that the transcript is in one of the publications, and I will make a note.
There's transcripts going around, Glenn, but what I'm saying is, do you know anybody who has actual audio of that?
I once recall seeing it on a documentary. There was that short film clip. I believe it also showed the lunar rover moving around, and there was a section in there, and I'm going to have to see. I cannot recall off the top of my head. I mean, there's such an immense amount of material. If I find it, I'll definitely forward it to you.
Okay. All right. I agree. That's weird. Let's go down. What in the world have we got here?
This is a Lunar Orbiter 4 picture, and it shows a certain area of the moon, and we're looking at a very straight, for lack of a better description, cigar-shaped object parked right next to the crater. And you can tell, if you look at this from the photographic standpoint, the sun is coming from the top of the picture or the north of the picture, illuminating the southern wall of the crater.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be like putting a cigar or pencil right next to it. And perfectly straight, and in configuration as well, cylindrical, and casting a very irregular shadow behind it as well. That can be due to a number of possibilities, either it not being totally on the ground or what have you. So once again, an interesting shot, and certainly does not look like a natural feature.
No, it doesn't. But it's not. It's still not what I would call clear evidence. I mean, for example, if we got a shot of an unquestioning shot of a building, Glenn, or I don't know, something that clearly everybody who looks at it says that ain't natural.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is interesting, but it doesn't, you know, come up to that high a bar.
Yeah, well, that's based on individual interpretation, and everybody, of course, has that right to do that. When you look at a lunar orbiter pictures, you're looking at a different quality of a shot, a much earlier in the space program. This is not a direct picture taken by a Hasselblad camera.
Right.
You know, so we're taking a completely different quality of photo here.
All right, next one. Lunar Orbiter 4, you're claiming this is actual construction activity.
On this particular shot, there are some numerics into the frame itself. So someone else at the source was clearly doing some research on this particular picture.
Oh, so those numbers came that way from NASA?
That's correct.
Isn't that interesting?
So there are areas in here where, and it goes, I believe, as far as 5, since this is a smaller crop version of the original picture. And it shows particular areas of interest here. And in conjunction with this shot, there seems to be an area where there seems some type of activity. We talked about terrace craters, walled areas. There's also an area which seems like there are reservoirs or constructions, irregular factions, like we have in Southern California for water that are, when you look straight down on them at one particular point, you can see into them. At other times, from different angles, they're silvery, like reflection of water. So this is one in a series of perhaps 25 different pictures taken.
Pretty weird.
Different.
Pretty weird. I don't know if I can attach all the meaning that you just did to what I'm seeing, but it is weird looking. It's busy, I'll give it that. Very busy. There's a lot there. But I don't know that I could look at that and say that's construction.
Well, each one has to determine what they see in it, and then it also helps to see the rest of the photographs in conjunction with it in the series.
I wish it wasn't like a Rorschach test. I wish that, you know.
Well, we have to remember, too. I mean, we're talking about a body 250,000 miles away, and you're going there in orbit, and you have to get used to looking at things from above to look for the shadows where the sun reflects, where it's dark and what have you. So it wouldn't be any different than flying at 70,000 feet or even much higher and determining geological features here.
Okay, this next one is really interesting. It's the last one in this series, and it says Lunar Orbiter 4, cloud hanging over left side of crater.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
Is this one clear enough for you?
It does look like a cloud hanging over a crater. There is not supposed to be atmosphere on the moon. That's all there is to that.
There's not supposed
to be any atmosphere there. Now, if that's not a cloud, let's think, what the hell is it?
When you look at the picture, you can see there on the left-hand side, you can see very clearly as you follow the rim of this crater, as you come up to this obscuration, the rim stops and then continues on from underneath it from below, but also it casts a bit of a triangular shadow underneath the obscuration that hangs over the rim.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. So once again, another photo to
go,
Yes, correct.
Over. You remember the obelisk in 2001?
Oh, yeah.
Many, many scientists believe that the moon very likely may have one of these, an object like an obelisk or something that is intended to make a transmission or a communication when we, man, reach the moon and uncover it. I mean, they actually think this is a likelihood that another... that an alien race would put something like that on the moon. What do you think?
It's possible. I can't say whether it would be or not. I mean, it's possible. Since we have no evidence of that, that's the best we can do. It leave it at that until we uncover it. Of course, it'll be difficult to uncover unless we really put together a united front and go back there and actually do something.
Well, now see, you're on to something. Let me ask you about this. It has been that long since we've been... since man has been to the moon. We haven't been back. There are a group of people, John Lear might be one of them, who believe, Glenn, that we were told not to come back. We were told to discontinue space travel, or we perhaps even were warned to discontinue space travel, and there are those who believe that's absolutely true. Do you?
I think the other way. I think that the exposure from space travel and the exposure to the possibilities out in space and the communications and what can be learned from that poses a change to our way of thinking and a change to our way of life, and we are very resistant to that change. In 75, when the space program terminated, it terminated from lack of funds, it terminated from lack of interest, political will, et cetera, et cetera. But there's more to it than that's just that, because when you get exposure, they bring about changes in the environment and in the patterns of how we conduct business on this planet. And I think we are more worried about that than the other way around.
Well, it apparently ended because of interest and no funding and all the rest of that. Yes, apparently that's why it ended. But a lot of people are not convinced that's all there is to it.
Well, then let's look at it in the other fashion. If you are being warned off not to go there, then why in the world would you come back with an untold sightings and landings and things like that that continued obviously since 1975, if we were supposed to be warned away and then this would be supposedly covered up or smothered over or what have you? The actions contradict, in my opinion, that particular theory.
But officially, certainly, it is a secret. If we found things, saw things, know a lot of things about the moon, it's obviously being kept secret from us, despite the comments of various people, despite sightings, despite all of that, officially, it's being held secret, right?
That's correct. And we just have to determine the reasons why. I personally think that when we look at some of these crafts, and we know what type of propulsion they have, and this was one of the discussions that was conducted at Goddard between the 22 scientists. They knew what type of electromagnetic propulsion was being used, free energy, for lack of a better word. The fact that the planet produces that as a giant Van de Graaff generator, hundreds of trillions of immeasurable volts. And if we continue to evolve scientifically where we stop fighting against the natural forces and merge towards them, we will find that a lot of our energy problems, pollution problems, global warming problems can be alleviated. And certainly the industries and the financial markets have a great deal to
say. Yeah, but you're not giving me a reason to hold it secret. You're giving me lots of good reasons to make it public and have a big parade down Main Street.
Well, yeah, that's what you think, but then, you know, we have to look a little bit deeper than that.
Well, look deeper for me.
All right, let's look deeper for a moment. Free energy suddenly creates no more oil consumption. The people who are making money out of petroleum products, which isn't just for our cars and jets, it overflows into plastics and into medical It has come into every aspect of our consumer product lives. The repercussions from that, every one of us has 401ks or looking for retirement. We have stocks and companies. We have all vested interests in maintaining a comfortable social climate that we have gotten accustomed to.
So what are you telling me?
What I'm telling you is that we do not want rapid change until we have managed to incorporate it in such a fashion that we can charge for it.
So then free energy would destroy the world as we know it?
It would change it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, from the point of view of those who peddle oil, not an inconsequential group to be sure, Glenn.
That's true.
It would end life as they know it, right?
Well, they certainly wouldn't be pleased about it.
Well, absolutely not. It would end life as they know it. So do you believe that's a big enough reason?
I believe it's certainly a large, definitely a large percentage of that reason, absolutely. And then we go a little bit further as well. Let's say that we become in contact with people who have explored greater parts of the universe and we have greater insights into things. Right now, we are a society of theory, and we theorize about everything, and we build theory upon theory until nobody can figure out what's real anymore. And we need to become more knowledgeable about what is reality and what is truth, and stop theorizing about it.
Do you believe that presidents know about this?
I believe that some presidents absolutely have been exposed to it. In fact, not too long ago, the History Channel put out a very excellent program based upon that. But they are just, believe it or not, you can't walk into certain areas of government and say, I'm President so-and-so, open the door. It doesn't work that way.
Well, there are many who feel there is a cabal which is either in touch or not in touch with any current sitting president that controls all of this information, you know, sort of above top secret and all that.
I've heard that term.
Would that be your view, that some presidents know and some don't, but there is a cabal that definitely knows? And
I would say that there are some elected officials that have had some exposure. For instance, there were sightings in the 50s, I believe, Truman and Eisenhower. There has been some reports about President Kennedy. Ronald Reagan, while he was governor, flying his jet in California, reportedly saw one and was a believer. Jimmy Carter put out a report when he was serving as a military officer, I believe, on a nuclear submarine. And so they have some type of insight. As to how much information that they are allowed access to, well, that we leave to the levels of government to determine.
Well, whatever else I think of Jimmy Carter, I think that if there had been free energy out there, Carter would have blown the whistle if he knew about it. So this goes back to some presidents perhaps know and some don't. I would think those with a closer connection to the military-industrial complex would be perhaps aware of what's going on. Those
perhaps
considered unfriendly to the military-industrial complex, probably, well, it would be, I don't know, probably just not mentioned to them.
Well, and it's once again based upon what exactly is going on at the time. I mean, you know, we have political events, we have governments and wars and all sorts of things that are going on each and every day. And,
yes, we do. Earlier today, I think I saw it on CNN, so some of you probably will have seen this commercial, and that's what it is a commercial. It's sort of a proud commercial, and it's a Saudi Arabian conglomerate corporation that owns a big part of a lot of our corporations, you know, and they're proudly saying, we own a whole lot of your life. We own part of this corporation, part of that corporation, part of this corporation. It is, I forget what the name of it is, something like Kingdom Industries or something like that. And when I saw that, I thought, man, talk about shifting fortunes. You know, they have taken, obviously, a great deal of their oil money, and they've invested it right back into the U.S., into companies in the U.S. mainly. And it was just, you know, kind of a shocking commercial to see in a lot of ways. So, I can buy what you're saying about oil, but it seems to me U.S. interest would be not in shifting our fortune in America to the countries that have what's left of the oil. But if we had free energy, it seems to me like we'd break that baby out and begin to use it, figure a way to charge for it. I don't know what they do, but something or another to prevent our fortune from going overseas. Now, so there's that. And then there's this, Glenn. What about, we've been to the moon. Maybe we're keeping a big secret. But the Chinese right now, Glenn, they're getting ready to go to the moon.
Absolutely.
There are going to be other countries that are going to go to the moon. And, the Chinese, they've got to just about buy all the oil they get. They get up to the moon and find there's something up there that will give us free energy. I doubt they're going to keep quiet about it.
Well, that's a distinct possibility. The Japanese also are very active, and they allocate a certain percentage of their budget. And they have, over the last decade, have set up plans to put up a moon base with honeycomb type of construction and hotels. So there are other countries who are taking the exploration of space quite seriously and believe the benefits of it.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Isn't that where the bubble bursts when other countries get to the moon? Even if we've successfully kept the secret this long, we've got to know the cat's about to be out of the bag, and we're going to be holding the bag.
Well, it depends on several factors. Of course, the geopolitical situation changes every hour, and it depends on who's beholden to whom. At this particular time, we seem to sell off all our interests, as you mentioned, the corporate kingdom corporation. But we have to also remember that we are happily selling off our country and our assets for a profit to anybody willing to pony up enough money. And so we are as much to blame as those who are purchasing it. But once the Chinese or the Japanese or any other consortium of countries get up there, then it depends on what kind of pressure could be exerted, budgetary-wise, militarily-wise. There are still some factors in this equation.
Well, maybe, but if China gets up there, I mean, they're competing in the world oil market right now with us. That's what's driving up part of what's driving up the price of oil.
True.
They need a lot of it, and they're competing in the world market for it. So seems to me, particularly in their situation, they would have nothing but an interest in, blowing us right out of the water and saying, look what America did to the world for X number of years, when really the answer was here all the time.
All the more reason to work collectively. Rather than playing this game, and that's basically what it comes down to, whether it's in this particular field of UFOs or many other fields. And
do me a favor, Glenn, back away from the phone just a little bit. It's causing a crackling noise.
All righty, how's that?
A little bit better. So, sometime between now and when the Chinese might get there, we are going to have to come to some kind of agreement if what you're suggesting is true, wouldn't you think?
That perhaps can be the case, and I would hope so for greater involvement and greater openness in this particular subject. It may take another generation, but hopefully sooner rather than later. We've waited long enough as it is.
Well, the whole UFO world and community could use more credibility, right?
There's no doubt about that.
And how do you think that might conceivably be obtained?
Well, the credibility factor comes in several different levels. First of all, I believe that the type of information that you represent and the way you represent it stands for itself, and the type of people who represent it as well are either a credible or non-credible source. Also, as we take this more seriously and are willing to embrace it a little bit more from a real and scientific standpoint, then I think that we will get a lot more cooperation in that field now, too. Right now, this field is a sea of confusion. It is a menagerie. It's like the Three Stooges, everybody pointing fingers at each other. And
it's not helped by some of the people that are in it, of course.
No.
It tends to attract the fringe element. And that's enough for the rest of the people to just sort of, you know, shake their heads and laugh or whatever.
Correct.
However, I've seen something myself, Glenn, completely inexplicable. Actually, I've seen something twice.
Mm-hmm.
And so many humans have had that experience. So many.
Yes.
That, damn it, you know, there's something real to it, but I just don't know how we nail it down, add that credibility factor that just has to be there to get us moving.
Well, yes, that's correct. And once you see something, then you start asking questions. And the more questions we ask and the more we network and converse with people, we find out. I talked recently to some gentlemen in the former Soviet Union, Russia, and they talked about the number of these craft landing and the openness that's involved in the interaction.
Oh, I know.
And so the more we open up the dialogue and the more we interact with our, you know, that's how we bring down the barriers. We've seen that socially just in the way we interact with each other.
Well, I've watched friends trying to open this whole thing up, well-intentioned, very brilliant people like Dr. Greer, who have really gone after it in the most conventional way you can imagine, amassing powerful witnesses, offering to give testimony that would be at the very least shocking, but the poor guy, he doesn't make a lot of progress. And he's doing it sort of from the inside, I mean, the right way. And still, he bats his head up against the wall, and I'm sure he'd be the first one to agree with that.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, Professor McDonald and Major Kehoe and Dr. Alan Hynek, and
all
went before the Senate in 1968 and 69, and in order to bring this mantle of secrecy out and be more open with it. And it was relatively squashed at that time, too. And so I think that is a valuable lesson, that in order to promote greater education in this field, it doesn't have to be in front of CNN or in front of the International News Conference, because that's where you reach the greatest amount of resistance. Well, you have to go amongst the people. And I think that's a very clear reason why we saw so many UFO sightings and so many contacts in I can't even count them, at least 100 countries during a particular point of time, because they found out that that from the official standpoint, from they were not going to release this information, even if they flew in formation over the Capitol building as they did in 1952.
Well, I was going to say, they did.
They did, and they did it again in 65.
And there are photographs of all that.
Absolutely.
We have photographs. It's the damnedest thing. We just don't...
So if our officials are not going to relay the information, then what do? You go amongst the people. And we do that normally, too. If we talk to a government and we find that government doesn't want to embrace our freedoms and our democratic ideals, we go to the people and hope that it works in through the back door.
Right. But so far, none of that has worked. The whole backdoor approach just, I don't know, it just falls apart. And there's too much there for this to be happening, and yet they succeed in... limiting the subject, I guess would be a way to put it.
Yes, they limit the subject, and I think to some degree we also have, we carry the burden of some of that responsibility because our attention spans are so short. When we come to general elections, there's always a consensus, a laughter, that the attention span of the electorate is no more than 20 minutes if you're lucky. And I think that says something about ourselves, too. If we have become so... I can't think of the proper word, but if we become so enthralled with everything else, we carry actually more interest for tabloids or what the Hollywood crowd is doing or who's wearing what than we do concerning information that is...
Well, not so much the crowd you're talking to right now, to be sure. But yes, generally in society, certainly you're right.
And we're talking about we need to have mass support in order to get something to change, and so... we have to be able to appeal to the interests of the masses, and that's a very slow process.
Talk to me about Adamski.
Well, we met George Adamski in 1963. Our family was in downtown Washington, and we witnessed one of these saucer-shaped crafts hovering about 1,200 feet. It was reported in the Washington Daily News. There was a reporter also there at the same time. I have the article. And due to this sighting of this saucer-shaped craft, as you see on some of the pictures on the website, particularly that frame of one of the motion picture footage, my father went to the Library Congress, saw Adamski's book, saw the same picture, contacted him, and George was coming out to lecture to the Air Force Reserves. We met him. We've become very close friends, and for the last 2 years of his life on the East Coast, we helped to arrange international press conferences and television and radio shows, and we were also a witness and to some of the events that took around him as well. After George passed away, we inherited the mantleship of the creation of the George Adamski Foundation along with other co-workers, and we have carried that forth since that time.
That's quite a lot.
Yeah, it's. I can truly say that... to use no other words, I've been blessed to be involved in this for, 40 of my 47 years. I mean, it's not just theory to me. I've seen it. I've seen it as a child. I've seen it as a professional and adult. I have seen photographs. My father took photographs. So it's this is not theory for me.
All right. We appear to be, according to many people, myself being one of them, approaching some sort of... ecological trigger point, some sort of I don't know. We all see the weather changing, Glenn. We see the poles shrinking. We see a lot of things going on Earth that sort of add up to real trouble rather immediately ahead for us with the weather and a lot of other things. Does any of what you've looked at coincide with any of what's happening here in any way? Can you connect the two?
Yes. The contacts that came to George during the 1950s were involved with several different levels of information. One of them was the result of our atomic testing and the fact that it was creating an immense disturbance and imbalance, ringing. The planet literally rings like a bell, as we recently discovered with the tsunami in Southeast Asia.
Well, in fact, it does. That's
and it,
correct.
And it also disturbs the magnetic rings of the planet itself, and it causes disturbances out in space. So that was a concern. Also, the planet is going through a geological shift, and this is science that we even understand. There are certain cycles. One of them is approximately a 26,000-year cycle in which we have shifting polarity, we have Teutonic increased activity and whatnot. And the education of those particular cycles of our planet was also some of the information that was given to George, and he talked quite extensively to scientists, to government officials, and to the general public as well. And so we're going through a planetary change. And also, we are exciting some of that through our little bit of wanton disregard.
Is there any way to compare the number of sightings prior to Roswell with the number of sightings after Roswell? Or how about this? The number of sightings prior to the detonation of the first atomic bomb versus the number of sightings since?
From historical records that go back as far, let's say, to the 1700s,
sure.
They would say that there is a continuous amount in a much smaller scale than after we started atomic testing. Then, as we mentioned before, we were looking at as much as 700 a day in the United States alone. And so this increased activity... They came to make us aware of certain things that we need to know. And we don't have to look at everything in the terms of cataclysm and Armageddon and things like this. These are natural cycles.
Well,
and if we work with these cycles and understand them, then it doesn't become so traumatic.
Well, there were a couple of instances very, very well documented, Glenn, when UFOs hovered above our missile silos and disabled missiles, nuclear missiles. And then there are reports also in the Soviet Union of similar occurrences, even scarier, in which an actual countdown to launch began and couldn't be stopped. They ripped apart control boards like crazy over there, never did find out why it happened, but put straight, they scared the hell out of both sides.
Yeah, well, we certainly need a little bit of scaring every so often, at least not in the sense of of terror is concerned, but we need a little wake-up call every so often because we're playing with forces and we're sitting on the potential to not only destroy all living things on the planet, but the planet itself. I mean, we are like petulant children playing with guns that are way too big.
So you think it was that? You think it was a warning?
I believe that they are, from reports that I've read as well, there have been reports of these crafts hovering over military facilities, over nuclear power plants, over Rocky Mountain area as well, in which we produce a lot of the plutonium and things like that, and over NORAD command and what have you. And so we have the very well-documented incidents in the United Kingdom and Britain as well. So I think that as a wise precaution, of course, we talk about why observe us. I think that's a primary reason right there, to keep an eye on exactly what we would do to ourselves and everybody else for the sheer sake of playing who's right and who's wrong.
Well, you have to wonder how an alien race would react to the knowledge that we have these weapons and then are beginning to test, enlarge them, and now, of course, what we can do makes Hiroshima look like a, you know, a little firecracker going off.
Right.
And so you have to wonder, is it your view that if something awful started, they would stop it?
I have heard that they have intervened on three circumstances in the last 45 years.
Really? Care to name them?
Well, I think that anybody who does a little research would find it for themselves there. But there are several, there were three circumstances in which we were on the brink, and that was de-escalated because of some extracurricular help.
That's pretty intriguing. Can you actually back that up, or are you just repeating stories, or what?
I can only, on some of that, I can relate that information directly from Mr. Adamski, who was involved in one of those circumstances.
No kidding.
That's correct.
All right. What I'd like to do when we get back, if we could, is to allow the audience to ask you questions. And I imagine you're going to get both the people who think that there's some possibility that what you say is correct with regard to bases on the moon and all the rest of what we've discussed and talked about,